court will proceed to the second case of the day, the United States versus Miranda. Mr. Nyman?
Your Honors, may it please the Court, Mr. Bond. Your Honors, my name is Nate Nyman. I represent the defendant appellant, Darren Miranda, in this case. I represented Mr. Miranda at the district court level, and I represent him on appeal here. The issue before the Court today is an issue of first impression in this circuit. There's currently a circuit split on this issue involving a case called Turner out of the 9th District and a case called Mosby out of the 8th Circuit. I'm sorry.
Isn't there a 4th Circuit case as well?
4th and 8th.
Yeah, I'm sorry. That's right. My brief basically focuses on the Mosby case because Turner case was actually decided on different grounds, even though the issue is similar, it decides the case on different grounds. Basically, the issue that's before the Court today is what constitutes confinement. And the government's position in this case, as it was at the district court level and as the district court found in its ruling and opinion, was that physical confinement controls. It's where the defendant is actually physically located that controls whether he's confined or not. The defendant appellant's position is that it's not where the physical location of the defendant is, it's which legal authority he's under control. And the reason that that matters here is because if he is held to be confined by being in the physical custody of the BOP, then his mandatory supervised release does not run. If he is not considered to be in custody of the BOP because he's in civil commitment proceedings, then his MSR, the mandatory supervised release, should run.
Is he in the same place for the whole time period?
Yes, Your Honor. He was in Butner, in North Carolina, FCI Butner, when he was awaiting civil commitment proceedings.
That's what I'm trying to figure out, is the time he served, how long was his prison term?
It depends. He served an original term, and then they filed a revocation petition on him. He went back to prison again for something like, I don't remember the exact number, but it was approximately 30 to 40 months.
You mean, he was released, and that, he was out, and then on revocation?
That's correct, Your Honor.
When did his criminal, service end?
Well, again, that depends, because when the first revocation was filed, he was given a prison term with an additional term of supervised release on top of that. So what we're talking about is whether that second term of supervised release that the government is maintaining that he's currently serving, whether that ran while he was in civil commitment proceeding. The reason that he actually awaited his civil commitment proceeding for nearly 4 years, and that's because the civil commitment proceeding was stayed for the constitutionality of the act to be resolved in the Supreme Court in Comstock. So that was stayed for about 2 years. So his civil commitment pre-trial wait was longer than most defendants would be today because of the 2 year stay.
And that was that period took place. During that period, he was at Butner in the FCI, correct?
That's correct.
He was not ever released from the FCI until the civil commitment proceeding ended.
That's correct. And what's interesting is
a Bureau of Prisons facility, right?
It is a Bureau of Prisons facility. I argued in my brief there's a case called Hernandez where it talks about basically a sexually violent person, Adam Walsh Commitment Act proceeding that was filed against a gentleman that was being held basically in ICE detention. And the whole issue was whether whether his detention, even though it was in a BOP facility, constituted confinement. And the government in that case was not willing to concede that physical confinement alone constitutes imprisonment or confinement for those reasons. And
was it confinement that was being construed or custody? To me, it was custody. The question was custody. Hernandez case.
Your Honor, you're correct. It is custody.
And the term that we're really concerned with here as to when supervised release begins is when a person is released from imprisonment, a different term than custody.
That's correct, Your Honor. The problem here is that the statutes basically have different words for the same thing, and that's why there's so many different interpretations of what these terms mean. I think that what is of primary importance here as to the fairness of these interpretations is that civil commitment proceedings have been held in the U.S. Supreme Court to be civil in nature, even though they closely resemble criminal proceedings and criminal custody. And they have been so construed at the request of the government, because if they're characterized as civil, then they don't have to give the detainee the same constitutional protections as a criminal defendant. So the government in that instance is arguing that it's civil, and now they're coming over and saying, well, it's criminal, actually. So basically the government's position in civil commitment proceedings and in this specific instance are at odds with one another. Basically, the government is arguing that the defendant's housing, I guess you could say, is criminal when it suits its needs, and civil when it suits its needs, depending on the situation.
I think I'm not clear. Is he in the same place? When he's civilly committed custody, whatever, is he in the same place as he was when he was in prison?
Your Honor, I believe that I believe that he was transferred from a different facility. It's my understanding from reviewing the case law and seeing where a lot of these cases originate, having to do with the Adam Walsh Act, that a number of them originate in that location. I don't know the exact procedures, but it's separate and apart from the general population of the Bureau of Prisons. It's a special ward, if you will, or a special containment of another different type of population.
That's if you serve in a civil commitment?
Well,
or while awaiting the determination of whether you should be civilly committed?
I believe that those individuals awaiting the commitment proceeding and those individuals that are sentenced or determined to have to serve civil commitment, I think that they're housed in the same place. I'm not entirely sure about that, but I think that they're housed in FCI Butner. I think that's where this program has sort of been implemented.
But from the time that the executed sentence ended until the time he was released after the civil commitment was terminated, the process was terminated, he stayed physically in the same facility. Isn't that correct?
That's correct, Your Honor. FCI Butner.
There was no break. He didn't go from one facility to another or from one part of a facility to another part of a facility.
He went from where he was serving his sentence imposed in criminal court to FCI Butner to await civil commitment proceedings. They filed the petition days before he was supposed to be released, and they picked him up at the gate, and now he's awaiting civil commitment.
Wow. And that began, his tenure in Butner began while he was still finishing his executed sentence. He stayed there until the judge released him from the civil commitment proceeding.
Yes. Our position is that the MSR that he would have been beginning to serve 6 days later, that should be allowed to be credited while he was awaiting civil commitment proceedings.
His civil confinement time period, you want that to be counted as supervised release? Is that what it comes down to?
Well, Your Honor, the time that
his supervised release should have expired once his criminal sentence was over.
And that's
they
correct.
Kept him in custody or whatever because of his concern that he couldn't turn him loose. So you think that should be supervised release? They say no. He comes whenever he is ultimately released is when supervised release. That seems to be what this whole issue is.
Well, respectfully, Your Honor, the defendant's position is that his term of supervised release should have ended at the term of his imprisonment that was imposed by the criminal court, just as any other supervised release would have begun to run after the term of imprisonment.
But it has to commence before it can terminate, correct? And it can't commence until his imprisonment ends. That's what the statute says.
Well, Your Honor, I believe that the statute says that...
It doesn't say his term of imprisonment. It says commences upon release from imprisonment.
And the Adam Walsh Act stays the release of the civil commitment detainee. But our position is that it may stay his release, but it doesn't stay the beginning of his term of supervised release.
But that's a direct contradiction to the language of, I think it's 3614E. Says the term of supervised release commences upon release from imprisonment. So your position is directly contrary to the statute. We have to overrule the statute, I take it.
No, Your Honor. What we're saying is that he was released from imprisonment when his prison term was over.
Not 3614.
Which is different than his release from imprisonment from civil confinement. We're arguing that civil confinement is not imprisonment under the statute.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Aaron. Mr. Baum.
Thank you, Jason. Jason Baum on behalf of the United States. The defendant was released from imprisonment on December 21st, 2012. That's the only date that's consistent both with Section 3624 and the Supreme Court case in Johnson. 3624 says that supervised release commences on the date that the defendant is released from imprisonment. The Adam Walsh Act stays that release pending the end of the civil detention proceedings. And the Supreme Court in Johnson said that imprisonment is its common sense definition, which is you're free from confinement. This defendant was not free from confinement, in fact, remained at FCI Butner until December of 2012.
And in Johnson, the defendant was held over improperly. His sentence had actually expired, but the prison kept him.
That's right. I believe he was kept 9 years. He should have only been kept 4 years, and there's 5 years where he's just wrongly imprisoned.
But in that case, then the Supreme Court found that the supervised release did not commence until he got out that 5 years late.
That's right, and that's consistent with the reasons we have supervised release in the first place, which is to help the individual and society with his reintegration into society. And that would be undermined here. We believe it's inconsistent with the statute, with Johnson. And we would ask this circuit to join the Fourth and the Eighth and the dissent in Turner in the Ninth Circuit and find that imprisonment is what imprisonment is, which is you're confined. He wasn't released until December And we believe that's when supervised release commenced. And you're right, it can't be told until it commences, which I think the Fourth Circuit says, as well as the dissent in Turner. Unless there are any additional questions, I would...
I have one observation. As far as the Adam Walsh law, it is designed to prolong the confinement, to keep these people off the street because of their propensity to do certain things. And it's shown in the past that they they're recidivists and they're a problem. So he gets an extra, what was it, how many years?
4 years in this case, Your Honor.
And by getting that extra 4 years, this is where I get confused, is the location. This is not a rehab time period while there's civil commitment, apparently.
No, he was at FCI Butner prior to the expiration of his criminal imprisonment. Yeah. He remains in the same facility during the civil imprisonment.
Is there a problem where, and this may be more of a policy question, is where the criminal confinement is too short?
The criminal confinement is what the judge determined it to be.
Yeah, but then somebody else says that's not long enough.
That's right. Ultimately, in this case, though, the district court in North Carolina said that it was long enough. He can be released. He's not a sexually dangerous person any longer. So I don't believe that's a concern before this court.
I understand that. I'm only looking at it sort of in a global situation because this to me is in the abstract a serious problem.
I think
that people are getting convicted of a crime, a serious crime. They're in prison for a certain period of time, and then when they've served their time, you know, that's sort of a cliche, then for whatever reason, I guess there's a hearing that determines that, you know what, he's not ready to go out. And most prisons are, I'll call them pedophiles or youth offenders, sex offenders, are they separately confined?
It's my understanding that many sex offender cases were being housed at the same place at FCI Butner, and that's why I believe almost every case that's been before a different circuit started in North Carolina for the same reason. It's my understanding that policy has changed as a result of maybe all of these cases, but yes, I think they were essentially being housed in the same location. That's how, in this case, even Mr. Miranda comes to know the very individuals that he then reoffends with, where he's calling them on the phone.
That's what I wondered, if they were separately put together, so that's where his buddies are, that's why he's making these phone calls.
That's correct.
And because of the threat to that prisoner for what he has done, he's not looked favorably by other prisoners.
I think that's right. I think there is some rehabilitation efforts that are maybe distinct to those prisoners as well, as opposed to individuals who've committed other crimes.
Well, it just seems that what your position is that he wasn't released until all this is over with.
That's correct.
We don't supervised release begins.
We believe he was confined until he was actually let go, freed from prison in December of 2012. That's correct.
Your brief spends a lot of ink on judicial estoppel.
That's
you don't
correct.
Argue it today. Don't you think we're better off to address this on statutory construction?
Absolutely, yes.
Rather than judicial estoppel.
Yes, that's correct. Thank you.
All right. Mr. Nyman, your time had expired, but you may have a minute if you want to have anything to add.
Thank you very much, Your I think that the base issue here is that these civil confinement proceedings, which are, to me at least, constitutionally troubling because of the lack of safeguards that are available to these detainees in criminal cases, are essentially being used to prolong the sentence imposed by the judge in the criminal case. That's what we have here. This is not a case where the defendant was subject to a petition, civil commitment petition, and he was determined to be sexually violent and therefore committed. This is a guy that waited 4 years to have his day in court, and he ended up winning and proving to the court that he was not sexually violent. And then the government is trying to say...
Of course, his victory is hinged on very strong representations to that judge that he would comply, exactly how he said it, but perfectly with the conditions of supervised release.
Your Honor, I understand that. I addressed that in my reply brief. That
it seems like it wasn't fairly won. It wasn't a fairly won victory.
Well, Your Honor, as I've stated in my reply brief, the government didn't meet the elements in that case. The judge felt comforted by the fact that he was going to be on supervised release. There's no question about that, and that informed either consciously or subconsciously his decision. But that doesn't have anything to do with the elements of the act. And the judge, on the third element, he does a very good analysis of why the government never met their burden there. So for those reasons, the defendant would respectfully ask the court to reverse the district court's decision. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Nyman. Thank you, Mr. Baum. The case is taken under advisement.